This is Leo Babeau for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio. We're hearing local voices with you along the north shore of Lake Superior, but I'm taking a journey across Lake Superior, Gichigami, today to visit with Michael Charette, also known as Laughing Fox, an artist, musician, writer, and performer, member of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. And welcome to our humble radio station. Michael, it's so good to visit with you this morning.
Bonjour. Hello, thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure, and it is an honor and pleasure to have you take part in our Cabin Fever Reliever. It's our eighth in-person spring benefit radio variety show and first time ever Native Nations Expo as part of our kind of grand celebration of talent and community radio. So thanks for becoming part of that this year, Michael.
Honored. I'm honored to be a part of it. Yes.
We've been having an interesting discussion before I officially flipped the switch to call this a recorded interview. So we may be talking about things we've been talking about already, Michael. But you were sharing with me that storytelling may have come first for you in terms of the influences of your elders and help putting you in touch with traditions of your people. You were sharing with me that you were hearing Ojibwe stories way back, maybe preschool. You want to reflect on what that meant to you growing up and how that influences you today?
Yeah. I was told the stories by my nokumis, by one of my educators, one of my teachers. Her name was Dolores Bainbridge. And I would have the opportunity and privilege of having her teach me from Head Start all the way till I graduated out high school. And so when you hear these stories, like, consistently throughout your upbringing, you're always able to see things from a different point of view. You know, something that I had heard in kindergarten, maybe it didn't occur to me its true meaning until maybe I was in eighth grade. So after we hear these stories and these teachings from our elders, they kind of help guide us along our path. And my grandmother, you know, she would always start her stories off with, you know, a long time ago, back when the world was forever cold. Now, she's talking about the time of the Ice Age.
Oh, yeah.
So these stories, they go back so far in so many generations that we don't even know how far back they go. And still, these stories are still helping to guide us today.
And you are a teller of stories, and you are presenting to audiences not just locally, but what does your work entail? Who do you go wherever people can help you get to? And because I've heard you've traveled a number of places out east and maybe more.
Yeah, it's always been a really good interaction with educators, actually. You know, when I would first start playing the flutes, I started off on street corners. And people would stop by me, and they would tell me, you know, the music helped alleviate some sort of a negative thing that they were feeling. And they would really, you know, support me to keep learning and to keep sharing. And I would do that. I would do just that. I would continue learning and sharing. And pretty soon from the street corners, I was playing at bus stops and then airports. And then along the way, I would run into educators who would invite me into their classroom. And I would go in there, and I found myself in the same position as my teacher, standing there telling the same stories and adding the flute music to that, as I have learned a lot of creation stories from the flute being one of the oldest instruments out there dating back some 60,000 years ago. But yeah, definitely those stories and those things would help guide me along my path.
You had the stories earlier than you had the flute. You were telling me that the flute came into your life after, I don't know, maybe we all have struggles, but you had some challenges as a youth. You also did boxing intensely for a while there, and along the way came the flute. Maybe I should let the storyteller, better at it than I am, to tell his story of how this came to pass, that you and the flute forge this lifelong relationship now.
Yeah, from a young age, I would take part in the local boxing club here, I believe back in 1987. I was like 10 years old when I would win my first fight and my first trophy. And boxing I would learn all these different things, nutrition, you know, self-dedication to the sport, what it takes to be that champion. And in this sport, you know, they wanted to teach us to be champions inside the ring, but also outside of the ring and helping take part in our communities as well. I would fight and box and compete for a good 15 years of my life. And at the end of this time, I would just be 26 and I would be having my daughter come into the world. And I would put down that boxing and I would start to walk a different path. But I had spent so much time training, so much energy in the gym, that after I had put the boxing down, there was very much that time that was left open. So I started to fill that time with the flute. It's really funny. My sister had was dating a guy, and I think he wanted to get on her good side, right? So he came up to me, and he had this flute, and he had asked if we could trade, like, some artwork, the flute for the Dreamcatcher. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, we can do that. I wanted to give my sister a good gift, right? So he would end up later marrying my sister, but he would gift me this flute. And at the time, I was living in a cabin out in the woods, or taking care of this cabin, and I spent a lot of time out there, and it was kind of secluded, so I found myself out in the woods quite a bit, and I started to take the flute out with me, and I would take a deep breath, and I would blow slowly into it, and that first note that hit me, it resonated with me, and I ended up playing that one note for about an hour, and I would just sit there and breathe into the flute. And I would start to think about the boxing, and I would start to think about how I spent all those years, like, trying to practice breath control, all those years of running on the road, building up my lung capacity, all those years of jumping rope, having this natural rhythm. And somehow, you know, it took 15 years of me training just to become and get my first flute and become that flute player.
So what you're saying is this was the perfect transitional activity from boxing to flute. Not all of us would have anticipated that would be the way that would flow.
Right, yes. You know, many would consider boxing a kind of a brutal sport or a, you know, aggressive sport. And then to go to something as calm and as mellow as the flute.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big transition. Yeah. And people often say that too about my writing and my poetry, like, you know, to come from a fighting background and then to, like, more from the fighter into this poetic role as a performer. Yeah.
Do people ever talk to you about, a lot of people would use the term meditative with flute music, and that's how they're experiencing it? Maybe for others it's more like, as you said, the breath becoming a prayer, becoming, you know, contact with the entire natural world. There's so many ways of looking at it. I don't know how, when you talked about the boxing and the rhythm and the breath control and the, you know, the conscious focus on staying in the moment, it seems to me that that all comes through in the flute.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. But, you know, in addition to having that boxing, I was also going to these Ojibwe language camps my whole life. And some of those exercises included listening to your environment. There was one exercise in particular that I found annoying at first, but later in life I really appreciated the experience. And for a week at this camp, I was like 10 or 11. They would have us go out into the woods and sit by a tree, you know, for an hour out of the day. And we were supposed to somehow reach out and feel a connection, you know, with that, with our environment, with that tree. And, you know, I kind of took the assignment seriously. And so in that way, they were kind of teaching me that meditation, that becoming, you know, quieting everything down and trying to feel the connection to our environment, to our spirituality, to who we are as beings, right? But having those experiences really gave me a different outlook on life and on our environment, as many of our stories talk about that relationship with our four-legged animal relatives. They talk about that relationship that we have with the medicines in the woods. And it instills in you, like, this certain amount of respect where that when you believe that everything has a spirit, it makes it that much harder for us just to take and take and take. You know, in today's society, they say that we take too much without giving back. And, you know, our Mother Earth is really kind of hurting right now from having that mentality and that mindset. So it's always a really good thing to come together and to celebrate our diversity. But we always have to keep in mind, too, that really what our Mother Earth needs right now is that unity. And sometimes when we look at our stories and our history as humans, we can see that there are more things that are connecting us than disconnecting us. And when I mean our old stories, if you look at the flood story, all cultures all across the world have some sort of a flood story. And when you look at that and you start to realize then, you know, yeah, there are more things connecting us than disconnecting us. And the cabin fever reliever, and this is about that. You know, the music is about connecting people. These stories are about connecting people, really about how to live a life in balance. You know, I did a show recently in Vermont, and after I was done doing the show, I asked for questions, and there's this one little kid. He raised his hand up, and I said yes, and he said, "Are the stories true?" Uh-huh. And I had told a creation story of Mother Earth. I had told a bunch of different stories, and I had told him, I said, "I was taught that everybody's stories are true because everybody's stories are gifts from their spirits and their creators. And we're always to respect their stories because their stories have helped guide us, you know, those countless generations going back so far that we don't even know how far back they go. And still presently, today, are still guiding us, as I will be coming there Sunday to tell some of these stories that are ancient, you know, from the time of the Ice Age and from before that time."
Well, thank you, Michael, for telling people why they might want to be visiting the Two Harbors High School on Sunday afternoon, March 10th. And it looks like the weather will be good and people can come from all points of the compass, all points, four directions and more to join us. And it sounds like it's an intriguing thing because it seems like the story and the flute intertwine in what you do, and I don't know where one begins and the other ends for you. Because one of the things you talked about, how we may have become driven apart by the forces of history and culture, and that we have so much to share in common, and we're also kind of separated in a lot of ways from our natural world. And that flute, that voice of that can channel all of the beings on the planet, seems to be an important part of what you offer too.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and so I'm looking so much forward to meeting you, and you're going to be bringing a number of flutes with you, I take it, maybe, to show us the range of the instruments that you sometimes play from.
Yeah, I have, like I said, I have like over 20 flutes in my collection. Unfortunately, I'm not sure how much time I get to get up there.
Never enough, Michael. I'm sorry.
There's never enough. You know, I tell my own students, my audience, you know, I'm going to try to fit 20,000 years of culture into an hour. So let's do this.
And we may be saying, now narrow that hour to 20 minutes and good luck. But I think we're also going to have you out in the Great Hall maybe before things get underway so that you can meet and visit with people. And I know we also are going to summon people into the auditorium from the Great Hall by having you maybe start playing on the flute so people realize it's time to gather. It can become a kind of a hectic, busy 300 or 400 people out in the Great Hall, Michael, so we're hoping that you'll introduce a little bit of a little bit of direction when we need it the most, and good luck with that, because it could be a lot of hubbub, and we don't really have a PA system out in the Great Hall, but hopefully the flute will summon people in a gentle way, and people will say, "What's that sound?" and they'll head in to hear you playing, and then we'll begin, and you'll be one of the early presenters of story and flute, and I don't know. I'm just so appreciative that we kind of reached out to you late in the game, and you stepped up, and thanks for so much. We didn't know that you were right across that lake that we look across every day. We didn't know you were over there.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. And I just got back from a trip to Maine.
Yeah.
I was there for a week, and I was working with, like, the Wabanaki people there, who are, you know, the original people of that area. And when I went into their territory, you know, I went right in there, and I gave them some tobacco and gifts, and I said, I'm an Ojibwe coming into your territory respectfully, and I'll be telling stories from my people back home, stories of Lake Superior, you know, and I don't want to offend anybody. And, you know, some of their elders, you know, took the gifts, shook my hand, and said, we know who the Ojibwe are. We consider the Ojibwe like our little brother, and welcome home. You know, so that was a really amazing experience.
Wow, that is.
To have. But I travel all over the country, and I give cultural demonstrations. I do a lot of schools. I try to get the younger kids and get them exposed to the flute music. I teach Anishinaabe culture, history, you know, drum song. I add a little bit of everything to the demonstration. And I've even gone beyond Turtle Island, having recently returned from a trip from York, England, where I went and I presented for a week. And it was really interesting over in York, England, because the people who I had met and had danced for and sang my flutes for really told me they appreciated me bringing that culture, because they said their own culture, they had been severed from their own indigenous languages, their own culture for so long that they longed to have that connection. They said they were ruled so long by kings and queens and monarchies and churches and Romans that all their indigenous stuff was severed. And now they were very much longing to reconnect to their Celtic roots, to their Nordic roots. They talked about them teaching Welsh in the school systems again, and that gave them hope. So I feel like not only are the indigenous people reclaiming some of their history and stories, I feel like it's a human conscious thing. It's a global awakening that's kind of happening. And we're finding the path to the future in those old teachings and in those traditional languages, because encoded within those traditional languages are how we are supposed to treat each other. And I know earlier I brought up talking about the spirit in all things, but when you listen to Ojibwe people and they introduce themselves, a lot of times they will acknowledge that, and they'll say things like, Buju nindunawe maganiduk, hello to all my relatives out there. And they're not just acknowledging their biological relatives.
Yes.
They're acknowledging and honoring that living spirit that resides in all things. So that living spirit in that tree, that living spirit in that river, and even that living spirit in that rock. And when you're a little kid and you learn that about your language, like I said, that gives you a different outlook on nature and how we treat nature. And when you understand that you're a part of that creation, and that creation is a part of you, you know, we start to take care of things better.
And today we have Michael Charette visiting with us on KTWH to help us with the long view. And I am wondering, Michael, we should let people know that you are a recording artist as well. I don't know how that figures into your career plan. Nobody makes money off of CDs anymore, but you have three... three wonderful CDs that you've produced, and we've had the pleasure of just being able to add them to the KTWH library this last week through the power of the internet, to tell you the truth. We didn't ask you to mail us some physical CDs, but it, you know, this stuff travels now through time and space. And
for sure.
Through magic.
Sure. And it's always been like the supporters, really, like the people on the street corners who encouraged me to keep going. You know, it's been those people that have, you know, inspired this path, really. And when I made the albums, you know, that was just to give back a little piece back into that community that very much supports me. And, you know, like I said, I traveled through schools in Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin. I'm now on the East Coast traveling around. I've done some shows in the West Coast. And it's just been a really, really... supportive community from people who do come and listen to the stories and listen to the music. And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate the listeners. I really appreciate the time that you have given me today. So, Chi Mi Gwich, thank you very much.
Miigwetch, thank you so much. Michael Charette, and as we leave, Michael, I'm going to just note to people that they'll probably be hearing your music during my show, and maybe I'd ask you, of your three CDs that we have access to, is there any particular piece that you might think I could sign off with or, segue out of our interview with?
Yeah. Do you have Butterfly Moon off of that album? There's a track called Chief Buffalo's Journey. It's all about Chief Buffalo and the signing of the 1854 treaty.
Wow, that's pretty pertinent. We're going to have the 1854 treaty authority there on Sunday, and I've been trying to catch up on some of that history that I should have learned a long time ago, and I'd be honored to play that, and I will. First, I have to load it onto our digital server, so I can't play it right now in the here and now with you, Michael, but I promise that's how we'll depart from our leaving now and joining back with you on Sunday. So I look forward to seeing you on Sunday, and thanks so much for visiting us with us on KTWH.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you, too.
All right. We'll see you soon. We'll be seeing you through the music that of yours that we play on the radio and always think fond thoughts. So I'm glad.
All right.
I am really glad we connected, Michael. Take care.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out. We'll see you.
Bye now. Michael Charette, also known as Laughing Fox, artist, musician, writer, performer, and member of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. And we'll head on out of here with the piece that Michael requested, Chief Buffalo's Journey, right here on KTWH.